The Committee on Public Integrity and Elections will come to order. Sanjay, please call the roll.
Representative Perez.
Here.
Representative Smith.
Here.
Representative Thompson. Representative Bardeman.
Here.
Brannon. Byrd.
Here.
Clemens. Daly.
Here.
Graw.
Here.
Ingolia. He's out. Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Coster.
Here.
LaMarca.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Silvers. Stevenson.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Representative Valdez.
Present.
Quorum is present, sir.
Thank you, Sanjay. Members, today we'll begin our agenda with a report from the Department of Children and Families on the settlement of claims against the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence. The settlement agreement is in your packet for you all to review. Today we were supposed to have Javier Enriquez, the DCF General Counsel, a good Miami man, but he called in sick. I think it was because he had to come see us today, and he was a little scared. So he sent the big guns. He sent Deputy General Counsel Andrew McGinley. Mr. McGinley, you are recognized to explain the settlement agreement as you approach the podium, and we're looking forward to hear what you have to say. After his presentation, members, you'll be able to ask him questions, so just hold tight until the end.
Thank you, Chair Perez, Vice Chair Smith.
Hit your button there.
Oh, there it is.
Let's see. Nope. Let me see. Try and speak. See if we hear you.
Hello?
There you go.
There we go. Thank you, Chair Perez, Vice Chair Smith, and members of the committee. My name is Andrew McGinley. I'm the Deputy General Counsel for the Florida Department of Children and Families. I'm here today to update this committee on the settlement of claims by the Department of Children and Families against the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence. The mediated settlement agreement resolves four lawsuits regarding or otherwise related to the excessive compensation paid by the coalition to FCADV CEO Tiffany Carr. The settlement agreement provides for the entry of a money judgment in the amount of $6,700,573 against FCADV and in favor of the Department of Children and Families. $3,135,000 of the foregoing was already paid to the department this past Friday, October the 15th. Further, the department required FCADV to litigate all remaining assets in the foundation and pay directly to its member centers an amount no less than $1.1 million to serve domestic violence survivors. The department is currently working with shelters to develop a recommendation on how to distribute this settlement money in a fair and equitable manner. We look forward to providing that recommendation and working with members of the legislature and their staff to allocate the non-reoccurring funds recovered from this settlement. That concludes my update. Chair Perez, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your brief and straight to the point presentation. I appreciate that. Anyone have any questions? Any members have any questions? Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Chair Perez, and thank you very much for your brief presentation. And there's a lot of questions in that brief presentation. So how, moving forward, what kind of steps have we taken in the department to ensure that this egregious behavior does not occur again?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Valdez, for your question. During last year's legislative session, the legislature established the Office of Domestic Violence within the department, providing 24 full-time employees to provide fiscal and programmatic oversight, quality assurance, and monitoring of the provision of domestic violence services throughout the state. Further, the coalition was removed from statute as a single source provider. Recently, a competitive invitation to negotiate was put out by the department, and a contract will be awarded to a certified domestic violence center to provide statewide domestic violence training, technical assistance, legal services, and operation of the statewide domestic violence crisis hotline. So all of these together, I think, will give the department much greater oversight of the domestic violence provision of domestic violence services.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you mentioned that the department is putting on an RFI for a single source provider. Do you think that that single source provider will not give us the same results that we had in previously?
You're recognized.
Certainly. So it's a little bit different this time around because it's not a sole source in the sense that we're forced to negotiate with the same provider as we were with FCADV because they were in statute. This time we put together a invitation to negotiate, and so we had a lot greater control over what it was we were bidding out and the types of services that we were going to permit this entity to do versus what we were keeping in-house. And I think the addition of 24 full-time employees to provide that oversight, the management, and the quality assurance is going to drastically change the department's ability to manage its domestic violence program.
One last follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, sir. So with this ITN, is there a clause, a 30-day out clause? What type of out does the department have in the protection of the state's the people's revenue as far as to protect those taxpayer dollars from being misappropriated or misspent again?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Velez. That's an excellent question. I think that's one that is, to provide the most accurate answer, certainly the department would be willing to set up a time with you, our programmatic staff, and our legislative affairs team to really flush out your question. As it stands right now, I don't have the exact details of the contract or the process.
Okay, sooner than later, because Mr. Chair, I think that that's going to be a very important
Also with me is Assistant Secretary for Administration, Tony Lloyd, who appears to maybe have an answer for you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. We want to try to answer the question while we're here. In terms of the risk going forward for the citizens of Florida and those shelters, from a budget perspective, understand the 41 shelters receive approximately $43 million from the state, from us. They also receive money from Office of Attorney General. But when the coalition was running it, there was $43 million went to the shelters and about $4.3 million that was actually sent to the coalition to do all, to manage all that. The reason that we're confident that that kind of abuse is a lot less likely to happen going forward in the future is because last session the legislature peeled out that provision. So that $4.3 million, some of it was converted to FTE for DCF to do financial oversight, contract management, quality assurance, all those controls and checks and balances. What we've got the ITN for is certain services that are more appropriately done by folks that are specialists in that area. But the biggest piece is that the funds, the $43 million going to the shelters, is coming directly from DCF. So there's no pass-through to the coalition. So their access to actual total dollars is going to be less than $2 million to provide those services. And that's a big piece of the assurance.
Great. One last question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. In the silo of DCF, are there any other single source providers that have existing contracts with DCF? And if we do, how are we closely monitoring those contracts considering what we just experienced?
You're recognized, Chair.
Yes, excellent question. And if you will remember, as a direct result of this experience, the Governor DeSantis put out an executive order where every agency was required to go through all of their contracts, identify those were sole source and those that were in statute, and revisit the reasons for those contracts being sole source. So we've gone through that exercise just like every other agency. To my knowledge, and I will correct it if I'm wrong, but to my knowledge, we didn't have any other statutorily required sole source.
Awesome. We're going to go with Representative Bartleman, and then we'll go Tant. And Mr. Lloyd, if you don't mind, before you do head out of the committee, just fill out an appearance card if you don't mind. All right, Representative Bartleman, you're up.
Thank you, Chair. My first question has to do with the repayment. So the article came out that the settlement was announced on August 26th, and the agreement said they had 10 days to pay. And you said you collected $340,000 thus far. So what's happening, especially with the individual who is $2.1 million, because that money goes directly to the centers, and there's like a time gap. So I don't know when it was officially signed.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. The amount that was paid by Ms. Carr, the $2.1 million, was paid this past, or was given to DCF on Friday. How it worked is there were certain conditions precedent to the department actually receiving that money. So that money was paid timely into a trust fund set up by the mediators held at the mediating law firm. And they held that until we fulfilled our conditions precedent to actually getting the money. And all of that was done timely. And on October 15th, that was paid out to us. But that money had been sitting in trust for in the time appropriate.
Okay, follow up. Thank you, sir. So I'm assuming everything else will be paid. Then for the OIG report that you presented us with, the education department had paid back the money that you felt necessary in that audit. And then you had the 12 agencies, and then you did a follow-up. But my question is, because that happened in the education department as well, is there anything that we need to do as a legislature to modify rules, create additional statutes to help make sure this doesn't happen in other agencies?
You recognize.
Thank you for that question. I think that's certainly something that the department is looking into. I myself, with the Office of General Counsel, we do have Melinda Miguel, the Chief Inspector General, here to better answer questions about the Inspector General report, but we certainly appreciate the legislature's willingness and availability to discuss this with us, and so the department would like to take some time on that question and get back to the legislature.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Yep. Representative Tant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being with us today. A quick question. I have two questions. On page 6 of the executive summary, it talks about the supplemental time off. So if you're looking at this document, that's what I'm looking for. So it talks about the supplemental time off, and it talks about
I'm sorry to cut you off, Representative. Is that the IG report that you're looking at?
I don't know where I got it. So at any rate, and I guess it's the executive summary, so executive order. So at any rate, in looking at that.
Probably better suited. I want you to ask your question, Representative, but it's probably better suited for the next presenter.
It is CIG number 21-125-0017, executive order number 20-44. Yes, so that's it.
Better suited for Inspector General Melinda Miguel.
Okay, I just wanted to ask about comp time, essentially, and whether or not are we going to, how was that calculated? How did that number become so exorbitant, and what are we doing? Is there any cap on that at the agency after this?
As much as you can answer, go ahead.
Thank you for your question, Representative. I believe that question is best answered by the Inspector General, as they did an in-depth investigation of the finances.
Okay.
All right, members, any other questions? All right, sir, you are free to go. Thank you very much for your time and for your presentation, Mr. McGinley.
Thank you all.
All right, members, next we'll have a report from Chief Inspector General on review of nonprofit contractor executive compensation. Chief Inspector General Melinda Miguel, as you get to the podium, you are recognized for your presentation that we look forward to. And members, as always, hold your questions until the end, and we'll have time to have a conversation once she has completed. Go ahead. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you today and answer any questions that you may have. I'll try to be brief, but I want to make sure that I allow ample time to answer some of the questions that have been asked to the extent that I'm able. So let me just get started and kind of show you some of the slides. For the members that were here before, there are a couple of slides that will be repeat, but I'll try to jump over those to be brief. So this is a summary of the enabling legislation for our accountability activities within the IG community. It kind of sets out the purview for which we operate on a day-to-day basis as authorized in law. This particular project on Executive Order 2044 began on February 20th of 2020 with the issuance by Governor DeSantis calling on the agencies to evaluate those doing business with the state as recipients of state or state and federal funds. You may also recall the reports by the Miami Herald at the time covering the payouts of compensation to the former CEO of the Coalition Against Domestic Violence. These reports drew light to payouts of $7.5 million in paid time off and other benefits to their CEO and other members of their executive leadership team. The funds in question were in whole or in part provided by the Department of Children and Families. We appeared before this committee last spring to offer some preliminary results, but we are here today to review the final report as issued on June 30th of 2021. Just to kind of cover a little bit of the background of executive order, just to kind of summarize real briefly, our report, CIG number 2021-01-05-0017, is easy to navigate. It is 172 pages long, and there are a lot of attachments. What I'm going to focus on is the executive summary session that's right there, and that starts on right behind the table of contents and goes just for the first couple of pages. Should you need to dive in on greater detail, feel free to reach out to me directly. I can come meet with you to answer any questions that you deem appropriate. I can also answer questions through Mr. Rubottom, the staff director for this committee, or the chair or vice chair. Happy to do that. If you'll note, there's a part one of section 1-4 that tracks the section of the executive order, and I'll review that in a little bit of detail. And then part two of the report is our analysis. The majority of the report is the attachments. We had made a commitment, and we are required to in law, to send those that are substantially affected by one of our reports an opportunity for due process to be included in the final report. It travels with that document into perpetuity. So it travels with their due process responses included. And I think that you'll find that that's really helpful. Just to be brief on some of the requirements, we were required to look at all entities named in statute in which the agency must form a sole source public-private agreement, and all entities through contract that receive annually 50% or more of their budget from state or a combination of state and federal funds. This section 2 also says within 45 days of submission of that first list, each agency obtain and review the IRS Form 990s and other appropriate documentation for each listed entity showing total compensation. And it was very specific to say that it includes salary, bonuses, cashed in leave, cash equivalences, equivalents, and severance pay, retirement benefits, deferred compensation, real property gifts, or any other payout for all members of the listed contractors' executive leadership teams for the past year. If the compensation totals exceed limits set forth in federal or state law or regulations, the agency shall refer the matter to the Chief Inspector General's Office for investigation and appropriate action. At the Department of Children and Families, the Division of Contracted Client Services took the lead. The team at DCF were consulted on the project and developed a survey to gather the data because at the end of the day, that was the bulk of what we ended up reporting or narrowing down to after culling through several steps. They sent out two formal requests for information, one on March 9th of 2020, another on April 13th. And the other documentation referred to the above included like review of 10-Ks, W-2s, payment records, consolidated financial statements, et cetera. That was verbatim language there in front of you from the executive order signed by Governor DeSantis. Section 3, just to summarize briefly, touched on the requirements of whether or not they had complied with Single Audit Act, and if they had any findings, what was the status of those findings, were there any non-compliance issues, and to make sure that they had submitted a timeline for completion of those findings. You can consult Chapter 215.97 Florida statute if you need greater detail on the Florida Single Audit Act. Section 4 requirements, this is a sample if you see the IRS Form 990, and if you need additional detail on that, there is a website, irs.gov, that you can get some additional details of what's required to report here. But that was also one of the reporting requirements, was for them to include the most recent IRS Form 990 detailing the compensation for the entities of the executive leadership team. So you can see that we attempted a deep dive. We had a timeline for completion. That timeline was extended due to the pandemic. Still, we were able to finalize that information, but some of the providers were still submitting information as late as January of 2021. Our data collection template, here is a sample of that for your reference. The Office of the Chief Inspector General created an Excel template to facilitate the collection across all of these agencies and through the nonprofits to make sure that we could evaluate the information that we were asked and tasked in the executive order. A set of instructions were provided to everyone so that to aid and assist them with completing the information. And we had quite a detailed list of what was required just to be able to sort on that information and tell what we were looking at so we could analyze the data, not to include or to include some of this information that you see on this slide. The sole source and government funding, section one, this is some more information for you for additional fields that were required. Same with this slide. I won't read it to you, but it's basically more on the required fields. And again, on section three. And I'm going to jump to this slide to try to be brief on the data collected and give you an overview. And then I'll give you the responses and our results of our review. And again, some of these are repeat slides from what you had last session or last spring. And if I'm needing to jump over a few, please allow me to do that, but I'd be happy to back up if necessary. The CIG, through the Agency Inspectors General, requested and obtained information from 38 agencies. According to the responses provided, 28 agencies met the criteria set forth in the executive order for Section 1s, 2, and 3. The remaining 14 agencies did not meet the criteria for those three sections. Thus, they did not have to provide any additional information. The agencies, I have a list of the 14 agencies that did not meet the criteria, but I think it probably is better to show you the ones that did. We obtained relevant data from the 28 applicable agencies by using the template to complete those sections. And you can see those agencies that were had data that was responsive to the executive order. Now on to the results of our review. So just to recap, you'll have sections 1 and 2. Remember, this is the sole source public-private agreement and that they annually receive 50% or more from their budget from state or state and federal. This rendered approximately 839 unique, unduplicated entities that were responsive in section 1 of the executive order. Specifically, 166 unique unduplicated entities were named in statute with which the agency must, for a sole source public-private agreement, must enter into one with the agency. Approximately 561 unique entities received more than 50% or more of their budget from state or state or federal funds. The sole source requirements, to get to one of the members' questions just a minute ago, I think you will see the number of entities per agency that show which agencies and the number that were sole source requirements outlined in statute. So the Department of Education, for instance, had the bulk of those, and then it drops way down to the Department of Elder Affairs, et cetera. When you see that 178, you'll notice in parens that it's the 166 deduplicated entities. So that's the hard numbers, the 166. There was an array of differing types of providers that showed up in those that list, particularly here, the one with the 166. And that array of differing types of providers were community-based care entities, health network, homelessness, early learning coalitions, Big Brother, Big Sister, Girl Scouts, Lighthouse for the Blind, Able Trust, Bethune-Cookman, Dan Marino Foundation, and Volunteer USA. The next slide shows the state funds or state or federal funds with greater than 50%. I'm sorry, just the state funds. The next slide will show the feds. That's 379 unique entities. The next one is the 508 that have state or federal funds, and you can see by agency the number of entities per agency, We have the list of those if you have any interest. And then just to summarize briefly, the Section 2 of the executive order that we'll review the results on now is if the compensation totals exceeded limits set forth in federal, state law, or regulations, the agency shall refer the matter to the Office of Chief Inspector General for investigation and further action. Using that reporting template, we ask those agencies to indicate if that compensation total exceeded statutory limits, and they had to do so by either saying yes or why or in that column reporting so that we could determine which one required further review. We compiled 179 entities in which compensation limits were applicable to the executive leadership team. 167 entities did not have excess compensation. They were deemed compliant. They did not exceed the statutory caps. 12 of them had compensation that potentially exceeded those statutory limits. The results continued are the 12 entities with the potential excess compensation were contracted with two state agencies below. And I think this gets to one of the member questions. The Department of Children and Families had 9 entities that were reviewed. 2 were confirmed to be above the limits, and I'll have a note on that in just a second. And then there were 3 entities reviewed that were through the Department of Education. It was actually the Office of Early Learning that had 3 early learning organizations that had deemed that were in excess of the cap, and those excess costs, those disallowed costs, have been returned to the Department of Education. Interesting to note, actually, on this slide is that in 2017 there were changes to the law that added that, notwithstanding any other provision of law, a community-based care lead agency administrative employee may not receive a salary, whether base pay or base pay combined with any bonus or incentive payments, in excess of 150% of the annual salary paid to the Secretary of DCF from state appropriated funds, including state appropriated federal funds. This subsection does not prevent or prohibit any party from providing cash that is not from those appropriated funds to a community-based care lead agency administrative employee. So before I go on to Section 3, I do have a little bit of detail about the ones that we deemed to have excessive compensation. There were a variety of reasons that were provided that I can refer back to if you're interested in. So Section 3, am I going the right way? No, I'm going backwards. That's not a good sign. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I was? Oh. Am I going backwards? Let's see. Let's go to slide 28. That's where I need to be. Please forgive me. Okay. So Section 3, just to recap, remember this is the Single Audit Act compliance section. The results of our review is based on the obtained response. There are 195 entities contracted with the state that are subject to the Single Audit Act, and out of those 195, we had 39 entities that had one or more finding. 32 of them have resolved all previous year findings, and 2 audits had not yet been completed by the time we issued this report. So we'll have hopefully 100% compliance in a relative short period of time. Section 4, brief recap. Remember, this is that each executive agency under the executive order issued by the governor was that henceforth requiring that the entities that meet the criteria listed in that executive order, Section 1, an annual report, including the most recent IRS Form 990, detailing the total compensation for the leadership teams going forward is an expectation for them to submit. Also, in addition, they need to agree through appropriate contract or grant agreement, an amendment or whatever to their current agreement, to inform the agency of any changes in total executive compensation between those annual reports. And so all compensation reports must indicate what percent of compensation comes directly from the state, and excuse me, that should say, or federal allocations to the contracted entity. This is an ongoing reporting requirement. The IGs are positioned in the agencies to test for compliance periodically. Summary of steps taken as I come to a close and entertain any questions. The summary of steps taken is this slide here provides a summary at a high level during the project. And like I mentioned, you can go into greater detail in the 172-page report if necessary, or feel free to call us if you have any questions. Notifications were sent to the providers. We did hold an entrance conference that was held not later than February 15th of 2021. The draft report was distributed in May of 2021, and the final report was issued June 30th that included the provider's response. And as I explained, that goes with the final report into perpetuity. For anybody that requests that report in the future, it's part of our document, so it becomes a part of that final set of final work that we all did collectively. So I think you can see here that I've come to a close. I just want to acknowledge the technical support of the DOT IG to help with the significant work, and the DCF Inspector General, IG Parks, is here with me today, who did the heavy lift with regards to the entities that fit this category under the compensation definition. And the providers were wonderful to work with to report this information to, and I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair Perez. I appreciate the report and overview of this. I was looking in some of your detailed notes, and I see that there may be some places that maybe that might need some refinements to carry out the spirit and intent of the law, like performance bonuses and those kind of things might not be considered. And that I was thinking of in Medicaid, if you have an executive split between different entities, they allocate the executive's time to consider the reasonableness of the compensation. Is there some things in there that you think need attention, or do you think is it fairly good? I guess we have more specific things on the community-based care, but not on the other entities, those types of things.
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did not consider the Medicaid provider specifically. There's a sophisticated cost allocation plan process that's submitted to the federal government that includes the way of billing those indirect costs that I'm sure you're very familiar with. So I did not consider that in light of this, but I think that it certainly is a good point. I'd be happy to consult with staff and with the director and see if there's something else that we can provide.
Well, thank you. I really appreciated the detail of this, and it's a great opportunity to see how the Inspector General's office works for all of us as members to see in a transparent way what you do. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Perez.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, having, I won't say read the report, but looked at it, I think, fairly seriously, I just want to confirm with a question what I believe I saw. And again, having spent 4 years on this committee and seen through the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence, I'm not sure if the legal term is shenanigans or whatever went on with the paid time off. I didn't see in the findings anything that was so egregious with the CBCs or anything like that that we saw with the coalition. Did I read that report correctly?
You recognize.
Thank you. I believe that you read the report correctly. This report does not touch on the additional work that was done relative to the methodology in which this occurred. That report is not finalized. So we hope to get you the answers that you seek on that very question.
Representative Tant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank you for your hard work. I can tell that must have been months and months and months compiling it all, and I appreciate it. A couple of questions. On the recommendations, or the, excuse me, that the follow-up that you are doing based on the information of the nine entities that are over over the limits of what they're supposed to be being paid, what steps occur once you've had the review of that of those agencies?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's an excellent question, and I can probably only answer in part, but I will do my best. So the two lead agencies that were identified to have member compensation in excess of the limits were, one in particular had billed a total of a salary to one of the community-based care organizations and another amount to the other county community-based care organization. And the same amounts were charged by the parent organization or rolled up to the DCF contracts in fiscal 2018-2019. So if you look at the individual buckets of the salary that was billed, the single bucket for that county didn't roll up or exceed the limit. But when added to the other county, it did roll over. There's not anything in the law that specifically prohibits that. It was an interesting explanation, so it was something we entertained in our response and have that in the report. And then the other had a particular, for the 2017 data, the salary plus bonus exceeded that 217 statutory limit by about $12,000 because he was paid under an agreement that was in effect prior to the passage of the changes in subsection 409992 subparent 3. And then for calendar year, that it did not go over that amount in subsequent years. And then the one other provider did not have any excessive compensation as defined because that person's salary was paid out of a managing entity rather than the CBC. So that specific scenario is not prohibited by law. It's not addressed in law. But those were the three nuances to our work that we discovered with the responses of those CBCs. One CBC respectfully disagreed. The executive in question's compensation from two separate entities that was included as one and requested that the legislature issue clear guidance on calculating compensation. The other said the overage was due to a contractually obligated one-time bonus in 2017, but no overages since, and also requests that there be more clear guidance from the state on what constitutes executive compensation. And then the final was unique in that it was a managing entity contract in addition to the CBC contract, and the combined entities charged the maximum allowable compensation under the CBC contract, but there is no limit in statute for the managing entity contract. So I think maybe that answers your question, and you might have had a subpart.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you do answer my question. I can't say I'm thrilled about it, but you did answer the question. It seems interesting to me that a county that may be a different size from one county to the next would be charged the exact same amount. I find that problematic, but that's beside the point at this point. But my next question goes to what I was asking earlier today, and that is with the supplemental time off that was in effect a bonus for under which just racked up to a really huge number for the Domestic Violence Coalition CEO. Are there caps on that? Should we consider caps on that, on the number of hours that should be charged? I'm just concerned about how quickly that added up.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Excellent question. I think that particular issue is not addressed in this report, but will be addressed in a different report. And as kind of a follow-up, we are in the middle of a phase two audit at the department to look at the contractual language, the contract management, and to make some internal improvement recommendations, which I hope, Mr. Chair, should be completed within Q3 or Q4 of 2022, this fiscal year, 2021-22.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Representative Tant, for the, I appreciate those questions, and I'm only allowed to address you, and I'm going to do that. Representative Tant's questions were kind of getting closer on the issue that I was trying to talk about. While we don't have numbers in here, it's hard for me to know if it was a little over or a lot over. And, I mean, clearly what happened at the one entity, I would think even might have be a private inurement issue and jeopardize the not-for-profit status. So it was an extreme situation. But there are others that may have more than enough, or you'd like to see more going into direct services into an executive's pocket. So I am definitely interested in getting into this a little bit more. And I really appreciate your comments and the interest. Governor Scott brought this up a couple of years ago, and I'm glad to see that this is being followed up with rigor under Governor DeSantis as well. Thank you.
Members, any questions? All right. I think that is it. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Appreciate the opportunity. And I'd be happy to entertain any questions outside of this forum, too.
Thank you. All right, members, any other commentary for today? Seeing none, upon the motion of Vice Chair Smith, and without objection, the meeting will stand adjourned. That completes today.